Hi everyone, Kieran from ASA here. A little bit of a different open to the podcast today before Harrison and Ben join me shortly. Everyone here at ASA and really the larger soccer analytics community as a whole got some pretty terrible news this weekend. Om Arvind passed away last week. I don't really know the optimal way to talk about this, but Om was such a pivotal member of this space and such a dear friend to so many of us, it feels necessary to do. Om was someone who everyone respected deeply. When he dropped a take or a nugget of knowledge, you listened. In ASA Slack, on Twitter, you listened. Our NWSL previews were a different level with him around. Some of his work, you can still go see it on his Substack Tactical Rant, is stuff that genuinely pushed the field as a whole forward. The dude was one of the first guys in the soccer space to use terms like floor raising and ceiling raising, basketball terms in soccer. Nobody had done that before Ohm. I could spend hours talking about all the amazing work he did, but I would really just suggest you go out and read some of it. It's all still out there. More importantly, Om was just a tremendous friend. Nobody walked the line of troll and banter with serious insight better. Om is the origin of the famous quote that NWSL is a transition fuckfest that came from Om. You probably heard me say it on Expected Own Goals a few times. I remember taking a train to Paris. And he was doing this bit about being a Liverpool fan because somebody called him a Liverpool fan after Real Madrid and in the Champions League or something. And I was taking a train and I had the tweet up on my screen. And the guy next to me is like, "Oh, I follow that guy. He's a fucking idiot." And it was just, we were just dying laughing at this guy's the biggest Real Madrid fan. All his tweets are about Real Madrid. And it was pure gold. And if you ask anyone who knew him, they'll have a story like that. And at the same time, he was deeply kind and deeply caring and deeply selfless. And again, if you ask anyone who knew him, they'll have a story about him. As part of Ohm's passing, there has been a GoFundMe set up the funds will go to the NWSLPA Emergency Fund. You can find the link on the ASA Twitter where the tweet is retweeted. It's already at $10,000 in the first 24 hours, which says a lot, I think. And the last thing for me is reach out to your friends and check in on them. You never know what's going on for someone. So as always, be kind and enjoy the soccer. Hello and welcome everybody to the American Soccer Analysis Show, the number one place for goalkeeper model disinformation. I am joined today by Harrison Crowe and Ben Bellman. How are you gentlemen doing?
You got me with
Doing
that.
great.
I did not expect that. Was really good.
Just flexing my soft power. Doing good.
Look, if there's one thing that we here at ASA can accomplish, it is a transfer for a goalkeeper. So Ben, we are on the hunt to get Stefan off of the Colorado Rapids and on to the Charleston Battery, who are taking Atlanta to extra time in the US Open Cup right now. That's where we're going to start. And we're not going to talk about specific games. We're not going to talk about how the twos are doing. But we wanted to talk about the US Open Cup kind of as an not an institution, but it is an institution. I think it's one of the
It's
longest running cup competitions in the world. And specifically, one of the really unique things about MLS is that MLS fans like kind of root for the league as a whole. That doesn't really happen in any other league. And I'm curious kind of to start from this place. Ben, where are you at in terms of how the league has gone about US Open Cup, and it's meshing with the league this year.
I'm disappointed by it. Like I forget who actually said it publicly, but I remember there was like stuff coming out of the Colorado camp that they actually wanted to start the first team and were upset that, like you said, they were being mandated that they couldn't play the twos. So I think it's disappointing, but I understand the frustration of the league, especially with the Federation, who they have some influence with. So I hope they can just sort of bring everyone together after all this, because this is a tournament worth preserving in some way going forward. And I think that's just where I'm at. Like, I don't like what's been happening. I understand that it's on shaky ground ever since the pandemic, and maybe even before then it wasn't really working for everyone the way that it should, like across a whole crazy, unequal, cobbled together American soccer pyramid. So I just hope it can be something sustainable for the future.
Harrison, yeah, I know you're a fairly big U.S. Open Cup guy. I know you've got that game on, and you're looking forward to Tampa Bay Dallas tomorrow. Where are you at with this?
It sucks. It sucks because, and I come from the standpoint of most of the time, and this isn't necessarily the rule, but most of the time they're cheaper games. They're games that more people can go to. They're not always, I know like up here in Seattle, we don't have them there at the big stadium. We have them at Starfire, which is a smaller environment. And it's much more, it's such a unique and cool experience. And like, honestly, it's, all these games are memorable. They're tournaments, right? Like, and what's great is to see these USL teams that we're told constantly are, you know, sub tier to MLS go on and beat, you know, and be the underdog. It was so much fun for years to watch LA Galaxy just get absolutely hammered year over year, and they wouldn't pay to have the games at home. And so they would always end up flying in the middle of the week to the East Coast, and they would lose to Charleston. They would lose to some South Carolina.
The Atlanta Silverbacks.
This Atlanta Silverbacks. Yeah. I mean, it was like wonderful. And it was like so absurd, and it was kooky, and it was enjoyable. And you could just absolutely watch somebody just get played off the field. Like it was so much fun. And even right now, like Charleston's like so much better than Atlanta. And I get it. Atlanta's, you know, there's a lot of things that are happening, but they came to play. And when you have this situation, I mean, you look at a few weeks ago with Detroit and Houston, right? That was a hell of a game. That was a crazy game. And it meant so much to Detroit. And when we take away the team's rights to field those first teams, you're taking away pay from the lower level players who maybe only will get one start a year, right? Who are coming up from that second team. And then we're also taking away from that local groundswell of fans. These games mean stuff to I won't want to say us, but like as a Sounders fan, US Open games, Cup games from the very first mean something, right? That game against Louisville meant something. And you could tell how much, middle of the night, the Clint Dempsey of it all years ago with the, you know, the red card wedding, right? Like these games are lore. And I mean, Chicago fans have years of talking about, you know, triumphs and, you know, failures that for them meant something. DC United won the US Open Cup while being one of the worst teams in MLS history. Like these games are crazy, absurd, stupid, and they are just like, for once we get to watch games. And I love it. I love it. I wish MLS would do better. I think that they owe it to fans. I think they owe it to their teams to do better.
I think the one of the critical points that neither of you really brought up that I think really dovetails with both of those is that MLS doesn't interact with the pyramid, because in the US it's not a pyramid. It's like a floating platform that is not attached to the rest of things. And I'm not going to become a pro rel truther or anything like that. Like I think given the constraints of the size of America, we can talk about that. It's not a realistic option here, but I think one of the critical things about things like the FA Cup or the Coupe de Ligue or the DFB Pokal or whatever European cup competitions that those cups are a tremendous way to bleed funding back into the pyramid. Like if, for example, tonight Toronto FC played CS Saint Laurent, who are the best team in PLSQ, which is like the regional semi-pro league below Canadian Premier League in Quebec. CS Saint Laurent are by far the best team in that league. But they are playing at BMO tonight and they take the gate. TFC pays to host them and they take the gate. And that will run their club for 2 or 3 years. As a club who like reportedly have ambitions of eventually being the first CPL team in Quebec. And they've gotten drilled 11-1 on aggregate, but nobody really cares. For them, they hosted TFC and it was 3-0 at their like tiny stadium where the Impact played in the 70s. That's where they play their home games. And it's just, you have these amazing stories. At the same time, they knocked off a CPL team the round before. And it builds these stories. I used to coach with a gentleman who was the head coach of a League One BC team, so the regional semi-pro team in BC, who beat a CPL team. They won 4-0 against the CPL team. And talking to him afterwards about it and like what that experience was like, and he's like, the thing I'm happiest about is like, we have a bunch of amazing players who should be playing at a higher level, and this is the only time anyone will ever see them. And so you look at these NPSL teams and NASL and whatever regional leagues there are, they get to play a USL team and this is an opportunity for them. A USL League One team plays an MLS team and this is an opportunity for them. Like, you imagine you're a 20-year-old kid with a USL championship team or a USL League One team and you play against Miami or you play against Dallas and all of a sudden they're like, oh, maybe we can get this kid an ex-pro contract. And I understand why MLS does not want to interact with the pyramid. I understand the incentives at play. And I also understand that US Open Cup has historically been a very, very poorly managed tournament. But I think that is part of your like obligation as being at the top of everything, is like you actually do have a mandate and a requirement to help the rest of the pyramid. Like, I think USSF, for example, should get a cut of expansion fees in MLS, and that should go into the pyramid. Like, things like that, I think, are a real loss. And again, it's a cup competition. You as a team can decide what you want to do. You're having a really good league season, and you don't want to double week guys, or you think you've had a CCL run, which is not CCL anymore, but you've had a CONCACAF run and you're like, man, we don't have the legs for this. Like, we're going to run the twos out. No problem. I don't begrudge that. That's your prerogative. But if Colorado or Houston or Austin or like whatever team who are like having an okay but not amazing year are like, you know what, we can make a run at this. Like, we can get a final and a trophy here. Why should they be restricted from that? So I don't love it, and I love cup competitions. I love the big team having to go play in some tiny stadium in the middle of nowhere. I love
it. Yeah, 100%.
And I wish they did a better job of, like, for example, and again, it's a very different soccer infrastructure, but like a Premier League team draws a non-league team and you have Tottenham playing at like a seventh division team. It's a national TV game. It's on BBC One, and the ground is packed, and they do a full pregame show. And Tottenham win 10-0, and nobody cares because it's like you have the backup goalkeepers eating a pie on the bench. And it's all part of the experience.
I know exactly what you're referencing to.
He got a suspension for that, by the way, because it was like advertising during a game or something.
Oh, of course.
But, my God.
Yeah, it was a puka pie. I remember the brand and everything.
Oh my God. it paid for itself, obviously.
Yeah, he got paid like a couple $1,000s to do the thing. So again, there's there's so much that I think that does. And you hear, Harrison, to your point, you hear so many stories of young people who, I can't afford to go to a Premier League game. I can't afford to go to an MLS game. Like, I look at MLS tickets now and it's ridiculous.
Getting like, there, yeah. For real.
I remember being in my first year of university and I went to every single TFC game and I think I paid $16 a ticket on average, Canadian dollars a ticket. And a TFC game is like $45 now. And as an 18-year-old, I could not afford $17, $45 tickets. Are you kidding me? So I think that is a huge loss. And to be honest, would I have gone to TFC 2 Canadian Championship game against the CPL team? No, probably not. So
I mean, so here's the counterpoint. And this is where I don't mean to play devil's advocate. And it makes me a little sad because I love the Open Cup. I love the Open Cup. And, you know, I love all of the lore and just like those crappy internet streams I used to watch and the crazy games that were, I'd see six goals in extra time, 3.5 from one team, three, like insane. When I hear a comparison to the FA Cup is where I'm like a little concerned because England's facing similar pressures. Like they're talking about dropping the League Cup, the Carabao Cup. Like they're talking about dropping it, right?
Yeah, the Carabao Cup is admittedly quite different because it's not open to everyone.
It's only the top four. Okay. So that's a little different. But I think so there's some saturation there. But I think the other side is there's no cult like MLS, most MLS teams, and I get Harrison's extreme Seattle nostalgia for this because Seattle's one of those clubs that turns out for the Open Cup. Recently, I was able to go to a US Open Cup match in person, which was the Hailstorm, which is from a new team from my area.
Shout out James Haleppo, assistant GM.
There you go. ASA fan. You know, go go Hailstorm, rep in Northern Colorado. I got to see them come down to the Rapid Stadium and like for an Open Cup match. And no one was there. It was like 2,000 people. They only opened up like one half of the stands because no one comes to these games. I guess it was midweek, but I'm like, this is the South Platte Derby. Like this is a local thing. This stirs my emotions. This is, you know, me growing up in Greeley, hearing the people from the Denver area yelling at the losing team, go back to Greeley, and me like, I'm a Rapids fan and I'm pissed about this. I'm ready to fight my own fans over this now. That's the Open Cup to me, but it's, no one else cares. And so I want to create a culture around it because US soccer has not done it yet. And I think that it's a governance issue. There needs to be money flowing and it doesn't have to be dependent on these tournaments. There needs to be real governance to make this culture a real thing.
Well, that's the part of it, right? Is like, we it's really team dependent because Colorado are like not pushing this. They're not doing anything like, hey, we have this FA Cup game we have this US Open Cup game. Like we're going to give out 6,000 tickets to Denver area school children. Right. We're not going to do it. Like I remember Canadian Championship games, like TFC would reach out to basically every single local club and be like, we'll give you 1,000 tickets or 500 tickets for like a grand just to get you in the stadium, just to get people to go. Yeah. And they don't do amazing. They're probably at 40% capacity tonight, but that's still 12,000 people. I think that's just part of it.
But it's not just on the clubs, right? Ben, you brought up like the financial, you know, part of it. And here's the thing, right? Kieran, you talked a little bit about this. There's players that are playing at USL that 100% should be on MLS teams. Like one specific reason why I'm really excited to see Tampa is Forrest Lasso. Forrest Lasso has been like an urban legend to me. Like for years, I've loved Forrest Lasso because he always performs really well when I watch him. Analytically, he does really well. He's somebody that I really, really like. And I think that he should be an MLS caliber center back. But for whatever reason, he's just been relegated to the Tampa Bay Rowdies for the past 5 years. And maybe that's just what he likes. And maybe it's at a point to where really, you know, it's comfortable. But this is, you know, this is a chance to see a player like him going up against some legit attackers that, you know, are going to cause him problems and that maybe he can't handle them like USL guys. Yeah, I think that there's a lot of different players out there that, I mean, we were seeing it right now with Charleston, who that has signed some young players. Phoenix has a young player from Italy that they just signed from Italy's U19 team. Like, the USL is not the same league. It's evolved along with MLS. And if MLS wants to start using them, and they should, it should not just be, hey, we're MLS and we're not part of the pyramid. There's another system and there's another league. And if you want to be a selling league, you have to develop a lower current. You have to have lower product that you can start pulling from. That's not just your club's youth teams, because you're going to miss players and that's missed money.
This is the thing, right? Like, is ultimately the benefit to a Premier League team investing in the pyramid is, like, you miss players. It happens. And that's in a country that has 65 million people and is the size of, like, Massachusetts. Like, that it's definitely way bigger than Massachusetts, but you get the point I'm making. But I think,
I don't know how big is Massachusetts. I don't know.
But when you think about, for example, Canada and the US, like, there are a lot of players who fall through the cracks. Lucas McNaughton is not an amazing player, but he is comfortably an MLS squad player. Didn't get a look in at TFC, even though he went to university in Toronto. Does a season in CPL, pops in CPL, boom, TFC. Now he's at Nashville. He's a good player. Mo Farsi, another one. Mo Farsi was amazing in CPL. In US, like, I think we were doing some league projection work a couple weeks ago, and Matthias pulled up something like, in the last two MLS seasons, 63 players have played for a USL team and are now in MLS. And whether that's like they went down to the twos, like there were a lot of like DC guys who played for Loudoun. I don't know how you say it. Loudoun. Who played for Loudoun. A couple guys who played for Red Bull too, whatever, so on. But there's 63 of them. Like, it's a useful development environment and you miss players there. So... this is a very pro US Open Cup stance of ours. Two teams who I have no idea. Well, one team is certainly not in US Open Cup, so we'll start there because they're not American. We're going to start on the MLS side with TFC today, who slapped with a tennis racket the Montreal Impact. 5-1, 6-1, 8-1, who knows? It was a drubbing. It was 3-0 inside 18 minutes, which is the fastest three goals TFC have ever scored. Or to go 3-0 up in a game. And we talked about TFC pretty early in the season with a real, not real. And we all kind of said, like, probably not real. Their XG against was really high. Their XG difference was pretty negative. Since then, they've crept up to like a +2. Mm-hmm. They are doing much better defensively. I think since they got drilled by Vancouver like 7 or 8 games ago, they lost 4-0 in a -2 expected goal difference game. They're like +4 expected goal difference over their next 6. It's very interesting to watch because it's very different than how this team has played at all for the past like 10 years. Harrison, as a Toronto FC hater by virtue of being Seattle, what do you think about TFC this year?
First of all, not a hater. I think probably I don't respect them as much as maybe what they deserve. This season's probably a prime example of that. I think part of it, though, is that I probably underrated Prince for sure. Prince has been fantastic. But Bernadeschi as well. Like, Bernadeschi really showed up this past week. But when he's there, he shows up. And it's hard to tell what type of attitude he's had. It's amazing what has been cultivated over the season. But
you know, I still have trepidation of whether or not he's going to consistently be that player, right? Another thing is G plus really doesn't like Toronto, but expected goals does. It's kind of they kind of swing against each other a little bit, which is kind of interesting. And probably have a better idea of why that is. I'd be interested in your takes, but I think that I understand why we felt the way that we did. I still kind of not sure that they're real. It's okay for a team to be on the fringe and match up really well against another set of teams. And I know it's not just the Montreal game. The Montreal game in and of itself, they came out, they knew it was a derby game, a derby game, whatever you want to say. And they absolutely gutted Montreal. Absolutely. And Montreal has struggled mightily the last month. So there's a little bit of A, there's a little bit of B, but there is some signal. There is some signal, and I do think Toronto is probably better than what we gave them. I still don't think they're a top four team. But are they a playoff team? Yeah, I think right now, with the way that we're seeing the shape of the Eastern Conference kind of come out, I think that they're competitive enough to be a 5-6 team.
Ben, where are you at? Because I think there's actually in this Chris Armas managerial support group. I think
we're here for each other.
I think there's actually a lot of similarities between this TFC team and the original good Robin Fraser Colorado team.
Interesting. I mean, I think I have not, I'm going to have to admit to all the listeners that I have not been watching these two teams as closely, but I do remember our takes from earlier in the year, and I have seen enough to know that I was definitely wrong about their defense. And I think I've been impressed with how comfortable they are with the ball. And I think they're one of those teams that are defending with the ball. You know, they're not so threatening. They're not using the ball to consistently like attack, say, like Miami. I think they're using it to control the game. And then when there's space to counter, that's when you'll see them push up through the flanks, you know, pretty quickly. Then that's when they get into the danger areas, you know, specifically with Bernadeschi. You know, he's just really running the show. I think there's some luck because they have been average. I mean, their expected goals is pretty high, but how many bangers have the Italians put in this year? Like, it's at least two each that I can think of. So I like, and I know there have been some good score lines, so maybe those are sort of just inflating and it wouldn't really change the outcomes in terms of the points at the end of the day. But I definitely underestimated this team, and I definitely think they're for real. I definitely think they'll be in the playoffs at this point. I think it's just gonna have to be like a big moment type of thing. Like, they could go for it because Insigne is playing again now, right? I saw him in this game. So if both of those two can have like amazing playoff series, they can make a run. So they're not the best team in the East, certainly, but they're dangerous enough.
Yeah, Ben, I think that's definitely true. I think Bernardeschi is a really good place to start because he, I will say, I cannot remember a player who has had a larger season-to-season difference. Bernardeschi was like actively hated by G+. Like, he was a big negative. His expected goal contributions last year, I believe, were like 0.2 or 0.3, something like that. Yeah, 0.34 non-penalty expected goals or assists. This year he's at 0.5 while playing wing back. So like just a totally different attitude. He's been awesome defensively. He's been awesome as a ball carrier. He's already got more goals than he did than he had last year, which is going really, really well. Insigne is back. He left in the 30th minute today, so I don't know if that was an injury or a like we're playing the like a amateur team and we're playing you so people come to the stadium. So I don't know what the deal was there, but Insigne went off after 30 minutes, so we'll see where that goes. But he has also been very productive, not in a expected goals, expected assists way, but in a like passing, creating, doing other stuff way, which has been really helpful. Yeah, Harrison, I agree. Prince has totally surprised me. He's like a two-thirds of an expected goal guy. Mm-hmm. His record in the second and third divisions in Germany was really good. But I'm totally surprised. And they've done a really good job. I've been very critical of like TFC's front office, especially since Devin left, where like I don't think they've made very good decisions. Devin, that is Devin Pooler, who was like famously the director of analytics at TFC, but now works for the larger MLSE organization with all the sports teams. But they've done a really good job with Jason Hernandez post Bob Bradley not being the GM anymore. Like Kevin Long, they were panned for because they're signing a 33, soon to be 34-year-old from Birmingham. He's been really solid at the middle of the back three. Deby Flores, washed out of MLS 8 years ago, has been awesome as a DM. And if you look at his stat profile, it's like this guy does nothing but tackle the ball and pass it forward. Same with Alonso Cuello, who they drafted and then stashed in Next Pro, another win for Next Pro.
I didn't think I'd see Shane O'Neill getting serious minutes at MLS at this point in his career based on how that went.
Shane O'Neill is a marauding outside right center back. You didn't see that on the cards, Ben?
I mean, maybe in 2014, but
it's not even that, right? It's that he's playing and things are going well. Like, I could see him getting minutes, but minutes in a season in which it was kind of lost, right? Like, things aren't going really well. So I guess Shane O'Neill's got to soak up some minutes. That I could have seen. And you know what? I would have guessed on a Toronto bingo card, like Shane O'Neill's going to have to play minutes and it's not going to be great, guys. The fact that it's actually gone really well. Shane O'Neill's a solid player. He's not, again, not the player that he was 8 years ago. So yeah, I think that's completely fair.
But he's fitting a functional system. So Kieran, this is to you as someone who watched a lot of John Herdman with Canada and now with Toronto FC, and then also saw Toronto FC with Bob. How much of this is Bob is not the coach, and how much of this is John Herdman is the coach?
I think there are like two parts to this. Bob Bradley tactically was like mostly fine at TFC. He had a dog breath roster. Like there was zero talent on that team. And that's his fault because he was also the GM. And it was like really young players. And then he replaced the really young players with old players who were not good. The Italians hated him, so they didn't try. There were a lot of things going on. His son was like playing, but also like snitching on his teammates to him. Like there were a lot of things going on. But from a soccer perspective, they played like reasonable soccer. They were basically a zero expected goal difference team for like the first third of the season, and then they went off the rails. I think getting rid of him has made the environment a lot better. And like we are, I think in the analytics community can often be quick to like reduce the impact of like having a fun place to go to work. And the other half of this is that Herdman, I got to take an L. I didn't think Herdman was going to do this good a job. I thought he would struggle going into club management for really the first time ever, because he's only managed internationally. But he's created a really good culture and they've done a pretty good job. They play basically the exact same way Canada did, with the exception of Canada was a 3-5-2. Here it's a 3-4-3, but they defend the same way, where it becomes a 4-4-2 situationally. It's very about the press. They care a reasonable amount about set pieces. He's done a pretty good job. And I think a lot of it is talent. Like they've just upgraded in so many spots and they've gotten so much healthier.
And their talent is trying now.
Yeah, and the talent is trying.
So that's a free upgrade in a way, or getting your money's.
For sure. But they've even like, they've found so many like random pieces, like Nixon Gomes is 22, has played 1,000 minutes at left back and left center back, and he's on league minimum and was an open trialist from that got released by Sheffield United's U20s. Like sometimes those guys hit and they're reasonable squad players. What's his name? Matty Longstaff is the brother of the better Longstaff from Newcastle, released by Newcastle. He's on 200 grand and he has been awesome in midfield. So I think like they've done a very good job of like just finding guys. Another one I want to shout out is like the Spicer draft pick for the first time in what feels like a decade, TFC have a draft pick that is like actively contributing to their team. And I was very critical of that pick because I was like, this guy's a winger who doesn't do anything but shoot from 35 yards. And I went for lunch with the scout who was like responsible for this pick before I left Canada, Martin Painter, who's like a local university coach. And he was like, he's really good. He's not going to be a winger. Trust me. And he's been awesome. So I think TFC have hit. And I really want to I don't even have too much to say other than like, I am very happy with the direction the team is going, but it's very fun to have. I think the league is better when TFC are good.
I agreed. Agreed. I think that they are, especially with the way that they spend, they're the East Coast Galaxy, right? We talked about this with the Galaxy, right?
Probably Miami is that now, but yeah, we're like the same in that we're like also kind of dysfunctional all the time.
I get that Miami is Miami is the LAFC, right? Toronto has history at this point in time. I mean, not just the MLS history either. It's you guys got a lot of, I mean, that whole area of Canada has a ton of storied history with the game. So I feel like, you know, and not to discredit Miami and everything, what they've developed, you know, there's also a lot of history there. Unfortunately, it's not all good, right? It's a little bit more trepidatious.
I've just about had it with your Fort Lauderdale Strikers erasure.
I wasn't going to throw the Fort Lauderdale Strikers into it, but thank you, Ben. I appreciate you. I legitimately, I'm getting to the point, Kieran, I want to know what's going on with their G+ profile and ultimately why are you not concerned with that, or are you concerned? Because it feels right now you have a lot of sunshine. I don't want to take that away
from take
that away, but what's going on there? And because G+ doesn't always have the whole story, right? There's lies in the data sometimes that we just don't know about.
So I think there's a few things. I think first is that they have climbed basically all the way to the middle of the table on G+. So they're like, I think they're like -1 G+ difference now, which puts them like 16th or 17th. So like, that's probably a playoff team already. And then they've like probably been a little bit results lucky for their performances. So like with the points they have on the board, they're almost certainly going to be a playoff team. The second half of it is that the trend lines are firmly in the right direction. They were so far like one of the worst teams in the league by G+ after 5 games.
And that's
so to go from there to middle of the table, we don't have we really should have this actually. We don't have a split by date feature on the website for G+ for teams. We do for players, but not for teams.
We have date range, don't we?
I believe that's only in the player ones. I'd have to go check, but
okay.
Anyways, regardless, them climbing from towards the bottom of the table to mid-table means that they've probably been very good over the last 8, 9, 10 games.
No, and that's a great shout out, because that is one of the things that I did question looking at some of their early performances, is where were they versus where are they now? And I didn't have the time to do that and try to go collect that information. Yeah. So that's a good shout out.
The other half is that like, they still have like locked in starters who aren't playing. Like Richie Larea has played 69 minutes in the first game of the season and has not played since, because he has been injured and now he's suspended for getting in that brawl with NYCFC. And so like eventually he will come back, and like that's another, and Richie Larea is a designated player for them this year, just based on his salary, which is like kind of a wasteful use of a DP, but he's not a real DP. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They waived an academy striker on a homegrown deal today, for reasons I don't know. Who knows? Maybe they have something planned. They waived Io Akinola, to make way for adding Dab God, Derek Etienne, who has been like, he scored tonight, but he's been another useful depth piece.
Yeah, for sure.
I think they're trending in the right direction. They're not as old as you would think they are, given their two DPs are both over 30. But they're like a solid team with upside and like I don't think we're gonna win MLS Cup, but like it's nice to go from being the worst team in the league for 2 years in a row to being like firmly a playoff team.
I was looking at the expected goals. That's why the expected goals table. That's why I was thinking that there was a date range on it.
Yes,
So
yes.
good call on that. And that's something we'll probably have to. I'm sure it's on the.
On the feature list,
on the Kanban board,
on the Kanban. There you are.
I said a dirty word.
You just summoned Jamin.
Yeah,
you just summoned Jamin.
I'm in his camp now.
Well, you know what,
listeners?
We'll have a podcast about it sometime.
We have a feature request. If you go to GitHub, you can put feature requests in. They might not get answered for a year to 2 years, but they'll be in there. Another team, Canadian team, who stole a late point this weekend was the Vancouver Whitecaps against Harrison, your beloved Seattle Sounders. And that's where we're going to head next. It's very funny to compare and contrast these two teams because TFC have a +2, +1 goal difference. They're fifth in the East. They put up a bunch of points and everyone is super happy. And Seattle are a +2 goal difference. They're 10th in the West. They don't have nearly as many points, and everyone is really mad all the time.
Yeah, all the time.
Harrison, here is your soapbox. What is wrong with the Seattle Sounders?
Mostly nothing. Legitimately, like mostly nothing, right? There's been a lot of bad decision making. The micro moments that make up the games early on in the season, there has been standout ones. The calls that don't go our way, injuries for key players. I mean, what we've had DPs that have gone down, that just, you know, De La Vega has been gone for, you know, a month and a half. Finally made an appearance this past weekend. That was really awesome. Paolo has been injured. Rui Diaz scores goals, but it feels like he's creating more XG, but it also feels like he's not as connected to the rest of the offense at times. There's little small things that stand out when you're not getting the points. Right. When you're getting the points, these are like small details that you're like, okay, if we just tighten that up, we will go that much further. And when you're not getting those points, you're kind of like, those are huge, huge bits. And right now, they're doing well. And the bottom line is they're doing well in the overall picture. But in these micro moments, they're making a collective range of just bad decisions. I think Josh Intencio is like second in the club or maybe third in the club in shots taken. That's an issue, right? Shot creation and overall XG generation is really falling behind. But in terms of defense, they're a great club. They're going on the road and they're getting points, draws. They're coming home and they're getting draws. those aren't equal points, right? You expect to win at home, you kind of expect to lose on the road. And so to draw at both locations, well, one of those is okay and the other one feels less okay, right? And losing games at home and seeing teams bunker, you look at the penalty kick that they lost out on that was called on behalf of Nuhu's flailing arm, which, I mean, I think you can go either way. I've heard pros, cons, Vancouver fans against, you know, Sounders fans for, whatever, regardless of the situation and how you come down. That moment, that penalty was about 80% of, in that one moment, 80% of Vancouver's expected goals for that game. And this isn't unusual. I mean, you look over the course of Sounders home games, teams don't play. They bunker. They're forcing the Sounders to try to be creative and win a game on their own attacking merits, and they don't have it. Whether that's happening because they don't have that 10 and De La Vega that's healthy, or that Rusniak and Paolo and Morris just aren't all on the same page and they're underperforming. Whatever the reason, whatever you buy into it, that's really where the point of contention really lies. And so that's kind of, in summation, that's Harrison's big ball of crazy on why the Sounders are okay but not okay.
A thing that's very unusual about the Sounders, and like a reason that I would be extremely not worried about their expected goal difference, they have had 6 red cards this year. And if you take out the games that they've gotten red cards in, and now, like, that's not a real way to approach things. Like, we would probably want to filter out minutes down a man or whatever. They're something like +5 expected goals and not +2, which is a fairly big difference. And that is like, there are teams who go 3 seasons without getting 6 red cards. And we can like quibble with the reality of those. I know like the Jackson Reagan one, people got really mad about. I thought it was like just a yellow, but they thought it was
Does that include Stefan Vrij's rescinded red card?
It does include, that's the one against DC, right? Mm-hmm. Yes, that does include his red card against DC. And the opposition have only had 1, which was in like the 5-0 drubbing of Montreal. So like that's the thing I look at and I'm like, hey, don't, you'll be fine. Like that's unusual.
Yep. Like they have 20 expected points and 14 actual points, and that's probably the difference right there.
Yeah, and 20 expected 20 points is what TFC have.
Yeah, I don't know. That's good. That's good.
But that's 20 points is like through 13 games is like you're firmly a playoff.
You're on playoff
team. A home playoff game.
Yeah, and not just a playoff team, but yeah, like we said, a home playoff team, right? Yeah. Which is what I think that everyone expects right now. Maybe you don't win the Western Conference, but you're a home playoff team, you know, contender 100%, and that's the expectation.
Ben, I'm curious what you think about this, because Brian Schmetzer had some interesting comments the other week about how like maybe this is just kind of the end of the run for like the core members of the squad, and like you have to slowly rebuild over time. And I think like it's weird to think about that with Seattle, because so many of their core are already gone. Like I think of like the core Seattle is like Chad Marshall, Brad Evans, Ladero, all those guys, and like all those guys are gone. Ozzie Alonso, all those guys are gone already.
Well, I think that's probably a good point of like how Schmetzer's been helping this roster sort of evolve. Cause I still see a lot, like we've got Jordan Morris still here, Roldan still here, Paulo still here. Rui Diaz is still here. So like there's still like the core has sort of shifted. And I think, I don't know how strongly I agree with that. Like, I think they can still, like this core is still going to be around. Like Rusnak's not that old. Morris is not that old. Joao Paulo is not that old either. He's like what, 32, 33, something. I'm not sure, but I don't think I think he's got a couple more good years left in him. Harrison, you mentioned Rui Diaz. I think that's the biggest worry for me. And I'm looking at his G+ in terms of players over 400 minutes. He's the worst on the team, and it's in receiving and it's in dribbling. He is not retaining the ball well. He is, I guess he's getting goals, but this seems like it's a middling offense, like average offense that builds into something that just is not, is disjointed in terms of what it can create. And so I'm not sure, like I guess the XG is fine. The goal plus difference is fine. But in a way, it kind of reminds me of Colorado right now, where now Navajo's starting to get a little hotter, but he was also underperforming in his goals added for a little bit too. And we're saying the same things about Colorado's offense in the same way, like good players, they're getting decent underlying numbers, but something's just not quite clicking. It kind of reminds me of that.
I meant to send you earlier. I looked over the last month of G+, and Navarro is 5th. Overall in G+.
Wow.
You hear that, folks? We trendsetters. Ben talking about Navarro's going to turn it around. But we talked about Colorado, and here we are. I think that's a really salient point, though, because I think you look at, just from a pure expected goals perspective, the leader on the team is Musovski per 90.
Yes.
And he's played three 90s.
Yeah.
Jordan Morris is at 0.44, which I think I'd have to check, but is probably well below his usual career numbers. Rui Diaz is below 0.4.
Rusnak's like right at zero, like just average for your attacking Morris midfielder is, DP.
Jordan Morris has been like somewhere between a 0.5 and 0.7 guy his whole Seattle career. Mm-hmm. And look, like, I just think when you look at the attack, like, there's just, it's not, as much as I think they're fine, like, man, I didn't love the Pedro de la Vega signing. I know he's injured. We'll see how that turns around. I'm not going to say he's a failure yet. But, like, you're just desperate for, like, if Leo Chu was, like, as good as his, like, name and overall Brazilian demeanor was, they'd be sick. But he's just, like, not useful. And Rusnak doesn't give them enough. And Rui Diaz doesn't give them enough anymore. And they don't get enough from all these other players. Like, I feel like they just need a little bit of pop in the attacking band.
A refresh, not a reload, maybe.
Well, yeah. And I think you nailed it, though. Having Danny Musovski come in and actually start and play more minutes, I think is a huge key. Dylan Tevez, he's got a lot of pop. You also have the young player from the Ivory Coast, whose name is
Menangu.
Yeah, Georgie is a fantastic dude. His numbers at the MLS Next Pro and USL all pop. So you have three guys that have a lot of potential in there. De La Vega, like you said, it's too early to call him, you know, a flop. He's been out for 6 weeks. And even then, he really didn't have very much time to really blend with the team. So, you know, I think that it's going to be really hard to really give him a fair shake until we're into July or even August, that we can start looking and seeing, does this guy really help this team facilitate? But those are three guys that I'm looking at. And this whole Sounders team is getting younger. I mean, that's part of what Brian Schmetzer is talking about when he's talking about, you know, replacing the core, because you're not just talking about some of the old guard. You're also talking about guys like, you know, we traded Arriaga, and you look at Kellen Rowe, who retired this offseason. You know, these are two people that were, you know, pieces of that bench, right? And now you're looking at, you know, Danny Leyva, who has to, you know, start stepping up and being a bigger piece. Reed Baker Whiting, you have to start earning a spot, a starting spot. You know, there's a lot of people that have a lot of hopes for him. Cody Baker, who has kind of come from nowhere and he's taking off. Andrew Thomas, who signed an extension, who's now going to be the heir apparent to Stefan Fry, who, you know, Stefan Fry has been remarkably average this year. You know, it's hard to envision him as that remarkably average player, because we have these highlights of what he does so imprinted on our brain just from playoff moments. And
you don't need to tell me.
And both of your brains.
I wasn't gonna say it. But like, it is a reload, because we have so many young players. There's so many players that need to graduate, and they need to figure out what they have. And this is going to be a tough year. This isn't going to be a year that you're thinking, oh, we're just going to trounce the league. It's another year that they're slowly figuring out where they're growing, because they're trying to do it in a very intentional way. And sometimes that's not instantaneous. And sometimes that takes time and it takes patience. And I don't think Seattle fans, Sounders fans specifically, are used to that with the Sounders. They're used to it with the Seahawks. They're used to it with the Mariners. This is different. This is a new experience for Sounders fans.
All right, yeah. I've got a crazy hypothetical for you.
Hit me.
The Rapids have a +3 expected goal difference. Seattle, it's +2.9. Seattle +2.2. You have to take one of their rosters for the rest of the year. Who finishes higher?
Between Rapids and Seattle?
Yeah.
Rapids.
Harrison?
I want to go with the Rapids just because I don't want to be pegged as the Sounder guy. But
you guys don't want to vote along party lines? Is that what's
happening? I don't want to. No, I hate being the... I don't like even mentioning that I'm a Sounders fan most of the time when I talk about a lot of this stuff, because I know that that's my bias and I don't mm-hmm. want it to be present. I do take the Sounders, though. I do think that they're overall a better team right now. I don't know if that continues. I think Colorado definitely has the potential to be better at the end of the season.
I think I won't call it bias, but what I'll say is the Sounders roster has proven to be high end in moments that count, and the Rapids yeah. haven't. But I will say, I think the middle of the Rapids roster is probably better right now.
That's I would agree with that. Yeah, that's fair.
The rest of this season, I think I would take Seattle. But if you ask me like total points over the next season and a half, so like the rest of this year and then all of next year, I would take the Rapids pretty handily, I think. Any other Seattle thoughts before we start to wrap up here?
That's an interesting one. We'll unpack that at another time. That was a nice little mic drop and then walk away, and then we're going to transition. I see that.
He's just trying to get us to fight in future episodes.
He is. I know I do. I have an idea in the pipeline for the Doldrums of Summer. Don't you worry.
Dance for me, monkeys. Dance.
Do we have a guy to remember, or a G+ update, or are we going straight to trivia here?
I do want to mention my boy Bakar scored this past weekend. So,
oh, Monsef.
Yeah, no,
Monsef did score.
Harrison has got. He's been hovering no higher than 2 for most of the year, and in the past 2 or 3 weeks, he's now up at 5. I'm at 6. Kieran's at 3.9. So it's getting a little interesting.
I'm closing the gap. NYCFC 2 lost 3-0 to New Mexico United, and Atlanta beat Charleston in penalties, unfortunately. All right, let's head into trivia. I'm not going to lie to you, we got some good questions today. They are TFC and Seattle themed. There is a US Open Cup question in there. Harrison, you won a rare feat last week, so I'm going to open with you, my dear. What question do you want?
Let's go 4. Let's go 4, sir.
All righty. TFC and Seattle have shared 12 players across their times in MLS. I want you to go back and forth naming players who have played for both clubs until someone messes up. First one to mess up loses, 2 points to the winner. Harrison, would you like to go first or second?
I'll go first.
All right, name a player who's played for both TFC and Seattle.
Shane O'Neill.
That is absolutely one of them. Ben, you are up.
Nice one. Stephen Fry.
There you go. Harrison, back to you.
And there's a winger. What is his name? It's going to kill me. What was his name? 3, 2, 1.
There's a player actively on Seattle's roster who played for TFC.
You mean apart from Shane?
Benizé.
Nico Benizé.
Oh,
another former Rapid.
Yeah.
Ben, you're up.
Oh, gosh. I'll try not to have too much dead air before I lose this. God, I'm trying to do a deep cut here, but they're not coming to me.
There are some, I would say there's some obvious ones still, but a few deep cuts as well.
Yeah, I'm not even going to get the obvious ones. I'll take the L on this one.
Ben's going to take the L. Harrison's going to go up 2-0. Some obvious ones we missed. Chad Barrett, Hercules Gomez.
I was wondering about Chad.
Eric Zavaleta, currently on Seattle's roster, Paul Rothrock.
Oh.
Nathan Sturgis, O'Brien White.
Nathan Sturgis is another former Rapid.
O'Brien White. Yeah. I loved O'Brien White.
Tyrone Marshall, Luis Silva, and Amadou Sanyang, who played 1 minute for the Sounders.
But literally, I'm so ashamed of myself. A third of that list were also Rapids.
Yeah, Luis Silva, Tyrone Marshall, and Nathan Sturgis, right?
Yeah.
Incredible. Nope. Alrighty. Well, you're down 2-0. And Herc. Ben, you're down 2-0. Can you come back 1-6 except for 4?
Let's do 3.
This is a Seattle question. I'm sorry. Adrian Hanauer is the majority owner of the Seattle Sounders, with his wealth primarily coming from some businesses and an early investment in Amazon. Name either of the businesses that supplied his wealth to make that Amazon investment.
Oh, man.
I have never heard of either of these things. So
sure, Harrison knows both of them. Are they Seattle related?
You can give me like the industry, and I'll
okay, the industry. Coffee.
It's a good guess, but it's not correct. Harrison, can you steal?
Mattresses.
I'm going to give it to you because I bet you this company does make mattresses. I see Pacific Coast Feather Company, who makes down for pillows, but I bet you they make mattresses.
Okay, pillows and mattresses was what that's, I was.
Bedding is.
Yeah, the other is picture frames, museum quality framing.
I did not know that one. I did not know that one.
Oh, capitalism.
3-0 to Harrison, who might run away with this because of the Seattle Natures. Harrison, what question do you want?
You know what? Let me have one that it's like I'm not even sure that this is going to go the way I think it will. Let's go with two, and I'm scared to death that I'm going to choke this away.
All right, the US Open Cup has been going on, MLS involvement or not. Only two teams have won 5 titles in the history of the US Open Cup. Can you name either of them?
Five? Would that be Sporting?
Sporting KC?
Yeah.
Incorrect, Ben. It's on the plate for you to steal. You can get back in.
Would that be the Seattle Sounders?
It's a good guess, but no. The answer are Bethlehem Steel, who later became Philly 2, and Maccabi Los Angeles, who won a bunch in like the 20s and 30s.
I knew I was forgetting someone from the early times that I just like, honestly, I knew it was going to be Bethlehem Steel. Like retrospectively,
I'm
like,
known that.
That's so obvious.
Should have broken out Fall River.
The Maccabi is a deep cut. That's a deep cut that I hadn't thought about in a long time. So great, great question there.
Ben, you are up. You've got 1, 5, or 6.
Oh, give me 1.
Alrighty, question 1. TFC and Seattle have played 3 MLS Cups against one another. There have been a cumulative 6 goals in those 3 finals scored by 5 different players. I want you to bid how many you think you can name, and Harrison can offer to bid more. So what 5 players have scored the 6 combined goals in TFC Seattle
final? I will bid 3.
3. Harrison, do you think you can name 3, or are you confident you can name 4? Because I think if you say 4, Ben will not say 5. Harrison,
I'm trying to remember who it was that scored the game winner in Seattle, because I have it in my mind and I know if that I can name that person. I don't think you can, but I want to own it.
You want to own it. All right, Harrison, can you name 4 of the 5 goal scorers in TFC Seattle finals?
So I think
I'm giving you 60 seconds, by the way.
Giovinco.
Well, you're already out. Giovinco did not score.
Did not score. I was going to say, all right, Lodero.
Lodero also did not score.
Altidore
got 2. Altidore scored in 2 of the 3 finals. Of course,
I earned this.
One was 0-0. The TFC 2-0 was Altidore and Vasquez. The Seattle 3-1 was Leerdam, Victor Rodriguez, Rui Diaz, and then a late Altidore consolation. So those are our fun. Ben, you've snuck
back. Who's the 3 for Seattle? It was Morris, Leerdam.
Leerdam, Victor Rodriguez, and
Victor Rodriguez. That's who I was thinking of. Yeah,
that was a deep cut to see.
No, I appreciate that.
Ben, you're back in at 3-1. A correct answer here, and it's 3-3. So you've got 5 and 6. What do you want?
I just picked one, so Harrison's up.
Oh, sorry. All right, Harrison, go ahead. 5 or 6?
Let's go with 6.
All righty. Alex Bono leads the league in passes completed over expected per 100 passes, mostly by virtue of lumping it to my beloved Christian Benteke. Who is 2nd on that list? Hint, it is a Toronto-Seattle episode. So most passes completed over expectation per 100 passes. Is it a risk taker, a safe passer?
Yeah, I was going to say, it seems like that would be a safe passer in this context. but I don't know. It seems obvious that, is it Stephen Fry?
It's a good guess. It's not Stephen Fry, though. Ben, you can steal to make it 3-2.
Is it Bernadeschi?
It is not Bernadeschi. It's our beloved, our ASA fan favorite, Jackson Reagan.
Oh.
Jackson Reagan, 33 passes above expected per 100.
Yeah. I would have, I thought for sure it would have been a goalkeeper of some kind.
Alex Bono is like 65 passes above expectation.
Holy smokes.
Yeah, goalkeepers.
Just because of like, the decade just bounce it down to something.
Yeah, goalkeepers who have like a big target man are usually pretty good at this. All right, well, the last question goes to Harrison, who has won. So you can clinch here.
I thought
it no, go- no, sorry, it goes to Ben, who can tie it up. Sorry, I'm having a nightmare. Who is hosting more World Cup 2026 games, Toronto or Seattle?
I'm going to go ahead and say Toronto.
It's a good guess. It's not true.
Wow.
They are both hosting six. A delightful trick question. I bamboozled it.
I guess Seattle's equal to the capital of Canada. It's just math.
Yeah, not the capital, but okay. Yeah, they're equal to Ottawa.
Seattle actually invented being Toronto, so.
You're not wrong. Well, we have 1 minute and 50 seconds left on the Zoom, so we're going to wrap up here. As always, hope you enjoyed the episode. If you want to support the show, check out the Patreon. It's $5, one tier. $5 a month, you get access to the Discord. There's lots of fun stuff going on in there. Usually I will come back to my phone after work and there will be like some tangential discussion that is always very interesting. And as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, if you want to support the charity in Om Arvind's legacy, the link will be in the description and on this tweet with this podcast as well. So thank you guys for joining me. We will see you all in 2 weeks. And as always, enjoy the soccer.